This is Tripod, New Orleans at 300. I'm Lane Kaplan-Levenson. It's July 3rd, 1982. Feminists have taken over downtown New Orleans and are marching through the streets in support of the Equal Rights Amendment, the ERA.
Under a scalding afternoon sun, several hundred ERA supporters wound their way from Armstrong Park through the CBD and headed for Jackson Square in a round of speeches with the theme, A New Day for ERA.
The Equal Rights Amendment. This march was actually a jazz funeral, but not for a person, for that amendment.
And they say they decided on a jazz funeral not to bury the idea, but to praise it. The traditional jazz funeral, they say, starts out in sadness, but builds to happiness with the thought of new life. So too with this jazz funeral.
The Equal Rights Amendment had just fallen three states short of being ratified, but these people came out to show they weren't going to stop fighting for the ERA, which was...
Let me see if I can recite it. Equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex.
That's Clay Latimer, a feminist in New Orleans who says, honestly, she can't remember if she was at that march or not. But she does remember that it was a jazz funeral mourning the ERA after it wasn't ratified.
By the way, most people do not know that.
That's Janet Allured, a professor in Lake Charles at McNeese University.
If I ask my students this, they don't know that the Equal Rights Amendment is not part of the Constitution.
Janet's one of many scholars still studying why the ERA never passed. She wrote a book called Remapping Second Wave Feminism, the Long Women's Rights Movement in Louisiana. And she actually writes about feminist Clay Latimer, who was very active in the fight for the ERA. But, like we said,
it never passed. It was never ratified.
Spoiler alert! Except not really, because that's not what this story is about. What's interesting about the fight over the ERA is not that it never happened, but that it really looked like it was going to, until it didn't. Before we dive deeper into the ERA, let's talk about the feminist landscape at the time. There were a lot of different feminist groups in New Orleans that were local chapters of national organizations, like the National Organization for Women, NOW.
I joined NOW on August 26, 1972.
There's Clay Latimer again. NOW was co-founded by Betty Friedan, who you've probably heard of, in 1966. If Susan B. Anthony is the poster child of first wave feminism, you know, the right to vote and all that, then Betty Friedan is the poster child for what we call second wave feminism. Which brings me to the lavender top Clay's wearing the day we meet in her apartment, which I wouldn't have noticed, except...
In the early days of the women's movement, Betty Friedan labeled the lesbians, especially in the National Organization for Women, as the Lavender Menace.
Betty Friedan rescinded this label later on, but she was homophobic, especially in the beginning of her career. She called lesbians the Lavender Menace, warning NOW chapters across the country not to organize with them, that they would be a detriment to the cause.
And lesbians picked it up as a symbol of pride.
You're wearing lavender today. Is that a coincidence?
No, I try to buy lavender clothes when I can find ones that I like.
I like to think about Clay in a department store holding a lavender shirt out at arm's length, admiring it, and tossing it into her shopping cart with a little smile on her face, sticking it to Friedan. Anyway, let's be clear, Friedan was not alone in this homophobic sentiment. Second wave feminism, like all movements, was internally divided, often along lines that corresponded to individual identity, from race to politics to sexuality. And the whole Lavender Menace thing really matters when it comes to New Orleans because the local movement was led mostly by queer women, which actually wasn't the case for the feminist movement statewide or nationwide. Janet Allured writes about this in her book, why queer women were more willing to organize and why married women held back.
We're sort of a poorer state, and we are a more reactionary state, and it's just more difficult for women who are married to men to risk that by joining a feminist movement that probably was not very popular, right?
Plus, there were economic consequences.
There would also be concern that it would hurt their husbands, or perhaps their husband's career.
But of course there were married straight women in the local movement, like LuAdrienne Reed. Louadrienne has a cat named Kitty, but let it be known, she does not let that pet sleep in her bed.
I don't like cats in my bed.
Yeah.
I mean, she gets mad about it.
She wants it. She wants it.
I tell you how old Louadrienne is, but she told me she'd kill me if I did. She grew up in New Orleans and lives in Broadmoor. She's the first African-American to join another local chapter of a national organization, the Independent Women's Organization, the IWO.
I'm still a member because the organization is still intact.
I know there's a lot of local organizations here. They all have a lot of acronyms and all the letters, but let's just all not be confused together. So Louadrienne was part of the Independent Women's Organization, the IWO, and then there was NOW, the National Organization for Women, and then there was the WLC, the Women's Liberation Coalition. NOW and IWO were considered more liberal groups, whereas the WLC was the more radical collective. The bra-burning stuff and all that, that was the WLC. These local feminist chapters usually didn't work together. They had different ideologies about how to organize and what to fight for. But they all came together to support the ERA. And Louadrienne Reed had her family's support.
To tell you the truth, my husband backed me. Often he went up to Baton Rouge with me. Maybe because he was a black man and he had seen it on another side. I don't know. But he thought it was fair.
Do you think he considered himself a feminist?
He may have. And he had two sisters and three girls. So what I think, even about some politics today, it doesn't bother you until it hits home.
This is why Louadrienne was surprised at first to find that her strongest opponents, those against the ERA, were women.
I am woman, hear me roar. In numbers too big to ignore, and I know too much to go back and pretend.
You're listening to Tripod, New Orleans at 300. I'm Lane Kaplan Levinson.
Down there on the floor, no one's ever gonna keep me down again.
Yes, some of the biggest opponents of the Equal Rights Amendment, the people who showed up when it was coming up in the Louisiana legislature, were majority female.
There's Janet again, the professor in Lake Charles.
Why would that be the case? Well, there's a lot of different reasons for that. Those were women who had invested in a certain way of life, and their lives might have been, or they were afraid that they would have been, radically changed by women's equality. And those people absolutely were housewives, generally, who didn't have careers and who were very concerned that the Equal Rights Amendment was going to change the cush arrangement that they had at the time, right, where they stay home and took care of children and their husbands went out to work.
Interestingly, though, the leaders of the opposition weren't housewives. They were career women, like Louise Johnson, one of just two women in the Louisiana House of Representatives in 1972. She was an anti-ratifier.
Now, she is Baptist, and you're much more likely to see opposition coming from Baptists. But she was not a housewife. She was an insurance agent. So it's kind of ironic that she would be leading the opposition to the Equal Rights Amendment in the Baton Rouge legislature in 1972.
Still, Louise Johnson connected with conservative housewives through a group she formed called Females Opposed to Equality, FOE. One time, when asked why she didn't support the ERA, Johnson said, and I quote, "There are only three groups that stand to profit by passage of this amendment. The prostitutes, the homosexuals, and the lesbians." Who knew homosexuals and lesbians were two different things? But anyway, she was basically saying, if you're not one of those three things, you shouldn't be voting for this.
You know, politics of respectability is what we call that. If they want to maintain kind of a respectable image or social status, they didn't want to be tarred with those feathers, right?
Clay Latimer may not remember whether or not she was at that jazz funeral or not, but she does remember Louise Johnson and says she watched as that message just started to spread and influence public opinion. She would go up to Baton Rouge to lobby for the ERA, and the male opponents,
many of them said their wives were opposed to it, and that's why they had to vote against it.
Who knows if those men were telling the truth, but there's no doubt Louise Johnson, the conservative state rep, that her strategy was working. And then there was the mastermind behind the whole thing, the most prominent ERA opponent nationwide, a woman from Illinois named Phyllis Schlafly.
The Equal Rights Amendment will take away the right of a wife to be supported by her husband in a home provided by her husband, and her right to have her husband support her minor children.
That was Phyllis Schlafly on Tomorrow with Tom Snyder, a late-night talk show that aired on NBC in the 70s. Before Phyllis came onto the scene, things were looking pretty good for the ERA. The amendment had been overwhelmingly passed by Congress and went to the states for ratification. But remember, this was before Phyllis Schlafly, a woman who received a master's in political science from Harvard and went on to run for Congress. But she lost, and so instead she self-published a book that urged conservatives to rally against liberals. The book was called A Choice, Not an Echo, and Phyllis sold 3 million copies out of her garage. With this attention, she set her sights on the ERA and taking it down.
They definitely underestimated me. They did not believe I could win.
More on Phyllis Schlafly and the death of the ERA coming up on the next Tripod. Tripod is a production of WWNO New Orleans Public Radio in collaboration with the Historic New Orleans Collection and the Midlo Center for New Orleans Studies out of UNO. Special thanks to Evan Christopher for the opening theme music and to the entire Tripod editorial committee. Catch Tripod on air Thursdays during Morning Edition and again on Mondays during All Things Considered. You can hear Tripod whenever you want if you subscribe to the podcast. And you can also be following us on social media at Tripod NOLA. And don't forget that this is part one of a two-part series on the second wave feminist movement and the ERA. So next week, you're going to hear part two. Stick around. In the meantime, I'm Lane Kaplan-Levinson, and I'll Tripod you later.